FRC Serve Our Community listeners, have your voice heard and share your thoughts through our online listenership survey. Visit CFRC.ca, click on the link, and take the 3 to 4 minute survey. All participants can enter for a chance to win great prizes from Smokes Poutinerie and Uber Eats. Your voice matters. Make it heard by taking the CFRC listenership survey today via CFRC.ca. Thank you for your support.
Good morning, Kingston. This is your indie wake-up call. Playing anything new and everything indie. Garage rock, hip-hop, folk, punk, and electropop. New, Canadian, and even local. Indie Wake Up handles your morning. Here for you, Kingston. Weekday mornings from 8 to 10. On the one, the only, CFRC 101.9 FM.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. On Thursday morning, a 15-foot wooden Trojan horse symbolizing a rally against the privatization of health services in Ontario visited Kingston Health Sciences Centre. Kingston is just the latest stop on the horse's province-wide tour. Part of QP's Ontario Council of Hospital Unions, OCHU, and the Ontario Health Coalition's efforts to be heard by the provincial government. With this protest, OCHU and the Ontario Health Coalition are, quote, calling for an end to the privatization of hospital surgeries and diagnostic tests, and demanding the government invest in staffing and capacity in public hospitals, end quote. The Ford government has been moving towards providing more private healthcare options for a number of years, passing the Your Health Act, allowing private clinics to conduct more OHIP-covered surgeries in 2023 with the goal of reducing wait times. In public statements, they have continued to reassure that quality and safety checks are in place, and the bill itself requires private clinics to show they have a, quote, sustainable staffing model in place. I sat down with Sharon Richer, Secretary-Treasurer of OCHU, to discuss the Trojan Horse's visit to Kingston. So to start us off, what is this Trojan Horse tour and what does it represent?
So we have actually been on the Trojan Horse tour for about 4 weeks now. And in Greek mythology, the Greeks actually presented a very similar horse to the one that we have today. And it's a giant wooden horse to the city of Troy as a gesture, really, of peace after a long war. In the dead of night, the Greeks broke out of the Trojan Horse and annihilated the city. And the city actually no longer exists today. And we're saying that this actually represents what the conservative government's policies on privatization represent. They're telling Ontarians that this is a gift that they're bringing them because it'll lower wait times, it'll end hallway medicine, the staffing crisis will be averted from the hospitals. And this is really not really true about what is happening. So that's what we're saying, that the symbol of the Trojan horses.
Yeah, thank you. And I mean, in Kingston, we've been seeing rallying against privatization for quite some time now, especially our last few updates were through research and reports that were presented. This feels like kind of a different strategy. What was this born out of?
Well, it is to continue to highlight the policy that the government's put in last year. And, you know, we want Ontarians to know that once these services are being removed from the public hospitals, it'll be really difficult for us to get back. You know, privatization really is redirecting the money and staffing from our public hospitals to private for-profit clinics, where, you know, people are making money off our taxpayers' dollars, in which were to be funded these public hospitals, and they're going to these private clinics.
I remember in the last few months, with the research and the reports that were presented, there hadn't been much of a response. Have you heard any response to this so far on your tour across Ontario or in Kingston specifically?
No, not from the government or the hospital today.
Or any
IPV in our community. For example, the report shows that sexual assault and partner violence are the second and third leading causes of violence-related emergency department visits for females in our region. Some of the actions taken in the last year include various strategizing sessions with community partners, awareness initiatives like Consent Awareness Week, and the release of the IPV Survivors Handbook by the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence Coordinating Committee, KFACC. I sat down with Ruth Nordegroff, Director of Community Development and Well-being with the City of Kingston, to discuss the contents of the report and the past year of action.
There's a long list of resources in that report and yes. Updates on what you guys have been doing for the last year. But I was wondering if you could share a bit about what resources Kingstonians have now that they maybe didn't have a year ago.
I think it's really important for listeners to know that there is a fabulous coordinating committee in our community called the KFAC, the Kingston and Frontenac Anti-Violence Committee. And that's a kind of a table, a round table with a lot of members that are working in the area of intimate partner violence, family violence, and gender-based violence. And they're all supporting on kind of both the prevention and intervention in the community. And really, I think they are the ones, you know, really holding or creating solutions. What I will say is they've done a fantastic job this year in creating something called the IPV Survivor Handbook, which is a really fantastic and I would say intuitive and accessible online kind of handbook for survivors. Obviously, all genders, and really kind of directs people where to go and what resources are available. I would say the other thing that I'm really excited about is also just really, again, this is more on the prevention side, but more of a collaborative approach across, you know, the city, the United Way, public health, and the KFAC members on kind of more intentional and collaborative outreach and education. So really looking at like one campaign that's going out on all the social media platforms and not multiple bits and pieces in different places. And I think that really, I hope, kind of starts the conversation and continues the conversation. The last thing I will say is, again, I can go on for forever, but I think on the research and data side, I know there's been a lot of conversation, obviously, around data. But I think starting with the research report that Public Health did is a really good, I think, foundational piece. And building on that, Public Health actually was able to secure some research dollars to continue the research and dive deeper. Well, there's some really great work happening, again, with the KFAC members around kind of how to create Obviously, not only that kind of digital kind of go-to with a survivor's handbook, but also an app that provides safe access for survivors to services. It also is looking at how do we move to the next level and actually create a look at how potentially a bricks and mortar kind of service or center could look like where survivors could go to. And then lastly, and this is obviously the city's role, is focusing on how we can really build this a kind of intimate partner violence, gender-based violence topic within our community safety and well-being plan, which is a city plan that also then allows us to see how, if and how we're moving the needle on some of these issues, like with data, with interventions and support.
And have you been receiving feedback from community members on action so far? What are they saying?
There's a lot of amazing feedback around like how important this work is. I think we're just really at the beginning. So I think there's still a lot, a lot to touch on. But I would say overall, I think people really and this is really what I'm hoping for, that people just feel like this is something we can talk about in the community, and that we can really remove barriers and ultimately, yeah, prevent intimate partner violence from happening. I mean, I'm a parent, I have teens, and I really think it's important that we put this, like, and it's an uncomfortable conversation, but put this into the line, into the, take it out of kind of, I think, shame and really make sure people feel that this is something that, first of all, we can prevent, and second, if there is an instance of violence, that there is a service for people to go to and they feel safe.
Once again, that was Ruth Nordegraff on the recently released IPV and GBV 1 year update report, covering what the city of Kingston has done since declaring IPV and GBV an epidemic last year. I also sat down with Paula McLaughlin, Executive Director of Victim Services of Kingston and Frontenac, and member of the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence Coordinating Committee, to discuss ongoing initiatives, including the possibility of a one-stop shop center in Kingston's future. Here is a bit of our conversation.
Sort of starting us off before we get into some of those more specific initiatives. In the last year, since the city has acknowledged this as the epidemic that it is, do you find that that declaration has made a big difference?
We've definitely felt a surge of attention since it's been declared an epidemic in our county. In particular, you know, having the city involved and in discussions with us about what gender-based violence looks like in our community, but also what we're doing as a community to respond to that in prevention or response of gender-based violence has made a really big difference. So with the declaration, we've had more people wanting to be involved and offer their voices to our different initiatives, including having it put into our safety and well-being plan with the City of Kingston, and also bringing the voices together on larger projects as well to see how we can all come together and collaboratively address a lot of the issues that we've seen.
For sure. Thank you for that. And one of the really big projects that came out of this year was the Survivor's Handbook. I was wondering if you could speak a bit about that project and how it's been helping Kingstonians since it came out.
Sure. The Survivor's Handbook that was put together by KFAC includes a lot of different things, from education about what intimate partner violence looks like, and a lot of the different services and supports that are available to survivors. It also has a lot of different elements like safety planning, so that survivors can actually document some of their own safety plans and keep notes within that handbook as well. So it works as a functioning document that can be tailored to the survivor. It also includes different elements like QR codes, which will directly link survivors to support network websites and different elements like that. So this handbook is made to be able to be used by all of the different social and justice services. As well, survivors can find it online to use on their own without being directed to it by a different service too, which is really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also saw in the report the possibility of a full center in the future to address this issue. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to where that project is at and what it could mean for Kingston if we're able to have something like that in our future.
So the concept of a one-stop shop has not been a new idea for the Kingston and Frontenac Anti-Violence Coordinating Committee. It's been something that's been on our wish list for a lot of years, and we've previously done a lot of research into what that could look like in the Kingston community. The struggle with a concept like that, though, is, of course, funding and how to start up these large projects. What the one-stop shop is an actual physical location where survivors would be able to receive support from all of the different community services and police in one building. So that means survivors aren't left to try to navigate complex systems on their own, going to different places, multiple appointments, in navigating independently a really complex system. They would be able to receive wraparound support in one building all at once. So this just kind of speaks to the collaborative efforts of the community and how much we're working together in the best interest of survivors. But of course, opening a physical location is a very expensive endeavor. So for that, we have struggled in the past to find funding sufficient enough to start up. But recently, our Ontario government put out a call for proposals, and we have put in an application for those startup funds for an amount of just below about $1.9 million to help us start this initiative. And we'll hear whether or not we were successful in that, hopefully here in December. So if we are successful, then that means we're going to be able to open the center and fund it for 2 years, in which case we'll have to create a strategic plan and approach for additional funding after the 2 years.
Coming up, November 25th kicks off 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, an annual international campaign that starts on the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women and runs until Human Rights Day on December 10th. The December 6th National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women also falls in this timeline. Throughout this surge, municipalities and groups making the declaration have been urging the province to do the same. Provincial Bill 173, the Intimate Partner Violence Epidemic Act, was put forward in March 2024. It has had a second reading ordered and was referred to Standing Committee in April 2024. There have been no further updates. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative. Be sure to check out our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca to hear the full story, including the extended cut of the interviews with our guests. This has been CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, with your headlines for this evening. Next up is student reporter Ali Al-Safadi with your campus news update.
Hello, everyone. This is Ali Safadi, CFRC's campus news reporter, and welcome to this special segment about the AMS assembly that took place on Monday, the 18th. This assembly was unlike any other. The AMS hosted both the Corporate Special General Meeting, the CSGM, and the Special General Assembly, the SGA. The CSGM of the AMS Board of Directors began at 6 p.m. and lasted about 30 to 40 minutes. Only voting members of the AMS Assembly and Board of Directors had full speaking and voting rights. However, the chair of board permitted the meeting to be open to the public, allowing everyone to attend and observe. During the CSGM, the board covered several topics ranging from budgets to organizational updates. However, the reason student-filled Sterling Auditorium was the AMS Special General Assembly, which began after the CSGM adjourned. This meeting allowed all members of the AMS, undergraduate students who have paid their membership fees, to vote. The SGA agenda included pressing topics such as policy approvals and the creation of ad hoc committees for policy review. Before diving into specifics, it's important to address the backlash surrounding motions 8 and 9. AMS President Rocky proposed two motions regarding the Queen's Journal. Motion 8 required the Queen's Journal to provide written reports to the AMS Assembly about any notices brought forward by members of the Assembly. The goal was to hold the Journal accountable for mistakes raised by student body and Assembly members. Motion 9, as explained by President Rocky and Secretary Garabedian, proposed the creation of an ad hoc committee to review and update the Journal's policy. Unfortunately, these motions sparked significant backlash. Many students misunderstood the AMS's intent after the Queen's Journal published an editorial titled "Student Dollars Pay for Censorship on Campus," which framed the motions as a threat to the journal's editorial autonomy. The assembly officially commenced with the first motion to adopt the agenda. Initially, many students and journal staff voted against the adoption, which would have adjourned the meeting. However, after clarifications from the Internal Affairs Office, a revote was held, and the agenda was adopted. The assembly moved through several other motions. Motions 2 and 3, the approval of the November minutes and the recognition policy. The recognition policy ensures that the AMS compensates student groups for their consultations. Both motions passed without hesitation. Motion 4 revolved around the reception of the AMS accessibility report aimed at providing diverse accommodations to make AMS assembly more accessible. It also passed without issue. Motion 5, the ratification of ad hoc committee compositions for assembly policy review, also passed smoothly. And Motion 6 and 7, amendments to proxy voting as well as changes to student activity fees, both passed without resistance. Now on to the motions everyone had been waiting for. Motion 8 proposed that the AMS Assembly amend the Constitution to require that the Editors-in-Chief of the Queen's Journal submit written reports to the Secretariat within 72 hours of receiving notices from Assembly members. These reports would ensure that the journal remains accountable to the AMS and does not publish material of seditious, libelous, or scandalous nature. Many students opposed this motion, believing it infringed on the journal's editorial independence. President Rocky clarified repeatedly that the motion sought accountability, not control. During the debate, students raised concerns, including an incident where the journal published sensitive information shared in a safe space. The journal tried defending itself, stating that the information was obtained legally, disregarding the harm caused. Despite these discussions, the motion ultimately failed after a ballot vote. Now moving on to Motion 9, this motion proposed creating an ad hoc committee to review the journal's policies, ensuring they remain current. President Rocky presented the motion in detail, emphasizing its intent, yet debates were lengthy and often unproductive. During the debate, Secretary Garabedian highlighted flaws in the journal's policy,
such as the exclusion of computing students from nominating themselves to run for editor-in-chief of the Queen's Journal.
Despite these arguments, the motion failed after a ballot vote, reflecting ongoing student concerns about perceived threats to the journal's autonomy. As for Motion 10, proposed at nearly 1 a.m., this motion required that the AMS Social Issues Commission to develop an equity policy, reaffirming AMS's commitments to indigenization, diversity, inclusion, anti-racism, and accessibility, IEDIAA. It also mandated consultations with student groups. After a productive debate, some amendments were made to remove certain mandates within the motion as well as the appendix, but this motion has passed. Finally, Motion 11, endorsing a fossil fuel divestment petition, also passed earlier in the evening. The AMS Assembly concluded at 1 a.m. with applause and celebration for the equity policy's approval. If you want to learn more, make sure to check out myams.org. As always, thank you for listening. This is Ali Safadi, CFRC's campus news reporter. Make sure to tune in, stay informed, and we'll see you next time.
Hello, sports fans. I'm Isabella Grito, and welcome to your CFRC Sports Desk. Today, we're gearing up for one of the biggest events in Canadian history, football, the 2024 Vanier Cup. The highly anticipated match is set for Saturday, November 23rd, 1 p.m. at Richardson Stadium, right here in Kingston. This year's championship will feature the Laval Rouge Aor against the Laurier Golden Hawks in the 59th edition of the prestigious Vanier Cup. Now, let's dive into the teams. The Laurier Golden Hawks earned their spot in the final by securing a victory in the UTEC Bowl, while the Laval Rouge Aor triumphed in the Mitchell Bowl. Both teams have proven themselves worthy of the title, and it's shaping up to be an intense clash between two powerhouse programs. Laval has been a dominant force in Canadian university football for years, and they'll be looking to add another Vanier Cup to their impressive legacy. On the other hand, Laurier is coming in with a lot of momentum after their thrilling UTEC Bowl win, and they'll be looking to upset the defending champions and claim their first Vanier Cup title since 2005. The game will be held at Richardson Stadium, located at 366 Hargraves Way in Kingston, Ontario. For those planning to attend, make sure to grab your tickets soon. Unfortunately, gold, bucket, and blue bench reserve seating is already sold out, but general admission tickets are available for just $20. Gates open at 11 a.m., so you can get there early to enjoy the excitement leading up to the game. Parking and further game day details can be found on the official Vanier Cup 2024 website. so be sure to check that out before heading to the stadium. In other sports action, we have a busy couple of days ahead. The Queens women's volleyball team is on the road for a matchup against the York Lions on November 22nd for 6 p.m. At the same time, the Queens women's basketball team will be at home at the Arc taking on their opponents at 6 p.m. Later that evening, the men's basketball team will also be at the Arc facing off against their competition at 8 p.m. And don't forget the men's volleyball team also on the road against York at 8 p.m. for November 22nd. That's all for today's CFRC Sports Desk. Now back to Christina Laurie with your weather report for this evening.
Thank you, Isabella. Now for your CFRC weather report for this evening. Tonight, we're expecting cloudy skies with a 40% chance of showers or drizzle this evening. We'll have rain beginning near midnight. We're expecting 5 to 10 millimeters and a low of plus 5 degrees. On Thursday, November 21st, we're expecting rain all day with 10 to 20 millimeters. We're also expecting a windy morning with a high of 6 degrees. Thursday night, we'll have rain with a low of plus 5. Showers will continue on Friday, November 22nd, with cloudy skies and a 60% chance of rain and a high of 6. Friday night, a 60% chance of rain or snow and a low of plus 5. On Saturday, November 23rd, we'll have cloudy skies with a 60% chance of showers and a high of 7 degrees. Saturday night, cloudy skies with a 40% chance of showers and a low of 0. Finishing off the week on Sunday, November 24th, we'll get a break from those showers and we'll have a mix of sun and cloud with a high of plus 5. Sunday night, cloudy periods with a low of 0. That wraps up your weather report for this evening, and next up is Jesse Bell with your CFRC Weekly Traffic Report.
This is Jesse Bell with the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week of Monday, November 18th, 2024. The following road closures will be taking place on Saturday, November 23rd for the annual nighttime Santa Claus Parade and Tree Lighting Ceremony. Market Street, Ontario to King will be closed from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. King Street, Brock to Clarence will be closed from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. Princess Street, Sir John A. Macdonald to Ontario is closed from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Road closures. Abbeydon Road, Highway 2 to Middle is closed to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert is closed until December 31st to accommodate construction at 484 Albert Street. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood will be closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th is closed for buried infrastructure replacement. The road will be open to local traffic. Kings Court Avenue, Hillcrest to Kirkpatrick is closed to accommodate a water main replacement. Union Street, Willingdon to Albert will be closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. University Avenue, Union to Earl is closed for construction related to the Queens J-Duck. Here are some other delays to keep an eye on this week. Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen for a contractor to complete road and sewer reconstruction. Bayridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd, expect delays while a contractor begins Phase 2 of the Bayridge Drive active transportation upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles to Edwin and Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes Phase 2 of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal updates, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard at Elmwood. Expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roadways, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road. And that concludes the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week of Monday, November 18th, 2024. This is your events calendar for the week. Have an event you'd like covered? Reach out via cfrc.ca today. On Thursday, November 21st, the Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. You can also head out Thursday to Kingston Community Health Centers, which will host the weekly Penguins Seniors Social Group for individuals 55 plus from 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Immigrant Services Kingston and Area will also host its Intermediate English Circle for folks seeking to enhance their fluency and vocabulary. Also on Thursday, head over with your runners to Runner's Choice for the weekly Out in Front running group for 2SLGBTQ+ runners, ready to run at 6:15 for a 5 to 6 kilometer run, followed by a post-run social. A comedy of drag errors takes place with host Rowena Way alongside guest performances including Tiffany Morgan, Blow Pony, Street Meat, and out-of-town guest Jordana Miles. The show starts at 7 p.m. at the Broom Factory. You can also head over to Daft Brewing for Queerioki starting at 8 p.m. There is a $5 cover charge. And of course, the Grad Club is running its free and hugely popular weekly trivia night every Thursday starting at 8 p.m. On Friday, November 22nd, the YMCA will host its weekly fresh food market from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Bonnie and Clyde the Musical debuts and will run 10 performances at Theatre Sesame in the Centre Culturel Frontenac, 1290 Wheat Hill, behind the RioCan Centre. Showtime start at 7:30 p.m. and general admission is $35. On Saturday, November 23rd, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Springer Market Square. Also on Saturday, McKinnon Brothers Brewing in Bath is hosting its annual holiday market with over 50 vendors selling artisanal crafts. You can also head out for another craft and bake sale being held from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Royal Kingston Curling Club. On Sunday, November 24th, get up early and head over to Runner's Choice for an early morning long run starting at 8:30 a.m. The Kingston Symphony Volunteers All Things Christmas Gifts and Art Sale is also taking place at the Kingston Symphony Warehouse, 785 Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., with proceeds supporting the Kingston Symphony. And finally, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., featuring food, artisanal crafts, and music. That's all for this week's events calendar. If you have an event you'd like covered, reach out via cfrc.ca and don't forget to follow CFRC on Instagram at CFRC Music.
Welcome to this week's concerts calendar. On Wednesday, November 20th, Sean Desmond is live at the Alehouse and Canteen with special guests presented by KPP Concerts. Admission is $55.44. The show starts at 8 p.m. From 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., Hotel Wolf Island is hosting free open mic night sessions. You can also head over to the Mansion at 9 p.m. for free karaoke. Head over to the Carson House for the Christmas Artisan Market starting at 4 p.m. Admission is by donation. Also on Thursday, head over to the club at the RCHA to see Michael George and the Francis Saint Gang starting at 7 p.m. Admission is $5. From 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., Original Thursdays with Eric Uren will be live at the Cove Inn. Admission is by donation. Starting at 8 p.m. at the Grad Club, Thursday Night Trivia will be happening for free. You should also head over to Hotel Wolf Island at 7 p.m. to check out Open Season Thursdays with Chris Brown, Joey Wright, and Jason Mercer. Admission is free. At 7:30, Derek Edwards performing Oxymoron will be live at the Kingston Grand Theater. Admission is $72.20. Also at 7:30, come check out the Bonnie and Clyde musical at the Le Sesame Theater. Admission is $30 to $35. Head over to the Royal Tavern 2.0 for a free karaoke night starting at 9 p.m. Head over to the Spire at 7:30 for the Ontario Festival of Small Halls, Glass Tiger. Admission is $58. Be sure to head over to the Toucan at 9:30 to see Billy Zizi and the Wild Rose Orchestra performing a free concert. Friday, November 22nd at 7:30 p.m., the Backsteps, Sons of Rick, and the Rambles will be performing live at the Broom Factory. Admission is $15. Starting at 4 p.m. at the club at the RCHA, Happy Hour TGIF with the Smokin' Roosters will be performing a free concert. Following up at the club at the RCHA, $5 dates will be performing at 8 p.m. Admission is $5. The Family Name with brothers Jacob, Matt, and Ben Matt will be performing live at the Cove Inn at 5 p.m. Admission is by donation. Starting at 8:30, Brian Gardinier will be performing acoustic classic rock at Hotel Wolf Island. Admission is free. At 8 p.m., Cassador, a well-known Kingston band, will be performing at the Isabel Bader Center. Admission is $20. Head over to the Overtime Sports Bar to see Kojak, Sunlust, and Dave Wilson performing at 8 p.m. Admission is $12 to $15. Starting at 7 p.m., The Great American Songbook will be performed live by the Limestone Jazz Collective at the Royal Canadian Legion Branch 560. Admission is $30. At 5 p.m., come check out Weekdays at the Royal Tavern 2.0 performing a free concert. Later that night at the Royal Tavern 2.0 at 9 p.m., come check out Jelly Train performing a free concert. Open mic with Jonathan Jones starts at 7 p.m. at the Spearhead Brewery. Admission is free. Free for All Fridays with music by Guido will be live at Stages Nightclub starting at 10 p.m. Entry is free with admission. Also on Friday, the Celtic Kitchen Party starts at 9 p.m. at Tiernan Og Irish Pub. Admission is free. If you're free at 5 p.m., come to the Toucan to check out Johnny Kirwan performing some acoustic songs. Admission is free. Later that night at the Toucan at 10:30 p.m., we have another free concert with the Sun-Dried Flies performing indie rock. Saturday, November 23rd at 7:30 p.m., the Jeffrey Goodboy Tour comes to the Broom Factory. Admission is $30.03. Robertson, Barton, and Colbert will be performing at the club at the RCHA starting at 8 p.m. Admission is $10. Stop by the Cove Inn at 5 p.m. for the Santa Claus Parade Hoedown with Henry Norwood and Sean McCullough. Admission is by donation. Christopher Jackson and Doug Vanderhorden will be performing live at 7 p.m. at the Creekside Bar and Grill. Admission is $10. 7:30 p.m., come to Doghouse Studios to check out Dead Root Revival. Admission is $20. Clay Pigeon will be performing live at Hotel Wolf Island starting at 8:30 p.m. Admission is free. Come check out the Jeremy Ledbetter Trio live at the Kingston Grand Theater, performing a Pay What You Want performance starting at 7:30 p.m. The Royal Tavern 2.0 will be hosting a drag show starting at 7:30 p.m. Admission is free. After the show's over, stay around for some karaoke starting at 10 p.m. Admission is free as well. At 2 p.m., check out Jody Payne and Landon Matthews at the Spearhead Brewery. Admission is by donation. Following them up at 7 p.m., Scott Rouleau and Matt Hanlon will be live at the Spearhead Brewery starting at 7 p.m. Head over to Tiernan Oak Irish Pub at 9 p.m. to see the Retrofits performing a free concert. Addiction, a 10-piece reggae band hailing from Toronto, will be live at the Toucan starting at 10:30 p.m. Admission is free. Sunday the 24th, starting at 5 p.m., Sundays with Eric and Megan will be live at the Cove Inn. Admission is by donation. At 3:30 p.m., head over to the Crossroads United Church to see the Shout Sister Choir with Georgette Fry. Admission is by donation. At 2 p.m., head over to the Elm Cafe for the Sunday's Best Series with Emile Steele, hosted by members of the Gertrudes. At 2 p.m., come check out Chris Murphy at the Inverary United Church. Admission is by donation. Head over to the Isabel Bader Center at 2:30 p.m. to see Misha Dichter, an internationally acclaimed pianist. Admission is $15 to $72. 6 p.m., head to Monty's for sit-down Sundays with Salty Dogs, Tony Vanny, and Kenny Paz. Admission is $15. Frank Ryan will be performing live at the Spearhead Brewery at 2 p.m. Admission is by donation. The Winter's Grace concert will be live at the Spire starting at 2:30 p.m. Head to their website for ticket pricing information. Have a concert you'd like covered on our airwaves? Contact us at cfrc.ca today. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
That suggested that four Brazil nuts once a month significantly decreases cholesterol levels within, I believe, 9 hours, and they kind of stay down for that month. And so, as suggested, well, why not give it a try? Unfortunately, people took that advice and said, hey, if four once a month is good, how about four a day? Which would be way too much selenium. Selenium has been termed an essential poison. I mean, we actually do need selenium, but there's a very narrow therapeutic window. And even a single high selenium Brazil nut a day is a pro-inflammatory. Actually increases inflammation within the body. So you can absolutely overdo it. Four once a month shouldn't be a problem. But you would do it for cholesterol reduction. Okay, next up, Mark says... asks, does cooking with vinegar lessen the nutritional benefits? No, the nutritional benefits are from the acetic acid, and the acetic acid is not destroyed by cooking. Good question. Nancy says, do canned mushrooms have any health benefits, or is cooking raw mushrooms the only way to go? The only problem with canned, well, two problems with canned vegetables. One, they taste gross, and two, the reason they because they taste gross. What do? They add salt to make them taste less gross. And so typically canned vegetables are loaded with salt. But if you can find canned mushrooms without salt, then go for it if you don't mind the taste or the texture. I find if you're like, well, I don't have access to fresh mushrooms, get dried mushrooms. You get all sorts of crazy dried mushrooms. I just got a big bag of porcinis, my favorite mushroom taste-wise. Oh, and also one of the highest sources of ergothionine, which is a so-called longevity vitamin. I talk a lot about in the How Not to Age book coming up. So you may indeed get some porcinis too, and they're delicious. Make a thick, rich, broth with them. It can be used for sauteing, all sorts of wonderful things. Anyway, so dried mushrooms keep really well, and you can get all sorts of different kinds of dried mushrooms. And when I talk about cooking, the importance of cooking raw mushrooms, we're just talking about agaricus mushrooms. There's some called agaritine found in that that family. And so that's white mushrooms, cremini mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, which are all just the exact same mushroom, just different stages of development. And that mushroom does have something that you really want to cook out. But oyster mushrooms, you can eat raw. In fact, you can make oyster mushrooms. In fact, I do make oyster mushrooms. I started out with those kits, you know, just like just add water and they have these beautiful blooms of oyster mushrooms. So cool. Then I'm like, whoa, I got to get serious with this. And then started actually getting spores and crumbling up and have a little bed outside under a tree and water it. And we get these massive mushrooms like this big. Anyway, so you can make your own mushrooms. And so, yeah, you can eat raw oyster mushrooms. The only other two I'd be worried about making sure you're cooking really well, shiitake mushrooms, not because of agaritine, but because you can get shiitake, this flagellate dermatitis, this whip-like rash, up to 10 days after you eat the undercooked shiitake, so you don't make the connection. And then morel mushrooms have to be cooked and shouldn't be eaten with alcohol. And even if they are cooked, don't eat too many of them. Anyway, that's a quick little mushroom bit. All right, next up, Gianni says, I am on warfarin. I've been diagnosed with antiphospholipid syndrome. For patients on Coumadin, can diet in the blood efficiently enough to remove the need for taking the drugs? For example, turmeric or some other kind of anti-inflammatories? And the answer is no. The gold standard for antiphospholipid syndrome, which can cause your, which is an autoimmune condition, which causes your blood to clot anywhere in the body. And basically the gold standard of treatment is lifelong anticoagulation using these so-called vitamin K antagonists like Coumadin. And so, yeah, you are going to be on this drug for the rest of your life, which is good news because it significantly decreases your risk of having a clotting event, which can be really quite serious. Of course, we have to worry about, because it's it works by blocking vitamin K in the body, which helps your body clot blood. And so if all of a sudden you ate a whole bunch of vitamin K out of nowhere, like eating a lot of dark green leafy vegetables, then you'd actually have, you'd replenish your body's supply that's being blocked by the drug, and you could become clotting again. So you have to titrate your drug intake with your greens intake and then have a steady greens intake. And so, of course, you want it really high. It's not saying don't eat greens. The reason doctors say don't eat greens is because they assume you eat no greens. So they're like, don't all of a sudden eat some greens. But what we should be doing is titrate up the levels of the drug to so you have lots of greens intake and you maintain that greens intake with your with the intake of the drug that adequately thins your blood. Okay, next up. Shayla says, any advice in dealing with anxiety and panic disorder? I do have a few videos. So for example, there's the University of Arizona video. A study found that those randomized to egg-free vegetarian diets had significantly, within 2 weeks, significantly improved mood and decreased anxiety. This was people who don't have an anxiety disorder. These are just normal people who just they're about anxiety levels and mood changing. The only anxiety disorder video I think I have talked about butternut squash seed kernels. Because they're high in tryptophan, relatively low in protein, and can get these neurotransmitter precursor into the brain, And I talk about that. So if you just type in butternut squash into nutritionfast.org, that should pop right up. Okay. Hubert says, if someone's bitten by a tick, it's not possible to pull it out, so that it was no longer visible. The tick was invisible in the body. How do you eliminate from the body by natural means? Ticks don't disappear in the body. They fall off or are dug out. So bitten by the tick. Yeah. So, I mean, if you are in an area with Lyme disease and you don't believe you got the tick off within like a 24-hour period, you can talk to your doctor about some like doxycycline or something, which can be taken up, I think, up to like a week after the tick bite to decrease your risk of getting Lyme disease. But there is not like a tick burrowing inside your body. That is not what ticks do, as far as I know. Okay, Tina says, I would like to know if Indian spices sauteed in oil, do they lose their antioxidant properties? At that kind of heat, they may lose some of their antioxidant properties, but the fat may help absorb some of the components that are fat soluble. And so rather than sauteing in oil, rather than cooking with oil, which can create some toxic byproducts, let us add whole food sources of fat, like nuts, seeds. So you can make like a cashew cream, or make that Indian curry or whatever, or add some pumpkin seeds on top, or some avocado or something like that. That'd be the best way to get the best of both worlds in terms of absorption. Okay, Hubert is back. How do I treat psychosis? Person with psychosis takes, you're not taking 500 milligrams, presumably micrograms, vitamin B12 daily. It's a plant-based diet. So psychosis can cause a variety of things, but classic causes schizophrenia, but lots of things can cause you to be psychotic and be side effects of various drugs, both illicit and otherwise. And so treat the cause is really what you need to do, and treat the cause. Find out work with your doctor to find out what's causing the psychosis, and then try to remove the cause. Larry says in a video, he said diets high in sodium, associated with increased risk of stroke. How high is high? High, is over 1500 milligrams of sodium a day. Ideally we'd stay below that. That's the American Heart Association recommendation. And diets high in sodium aren't just associated with increased risk of strokes, but all sorts of things. High blood pressure, kidney damage, autoimmune disease, you name it. We really need to cut down on our salt intake, which is mostly processed foods. About 70% of sodium intake is from processed foods. So, eliminating, not only just not adding, salt at the kitchen or dinner table, but, anything kind of in a box or a bag or a can, really need to check to make sure that it has less sodium than there are calories per serving. And then at least it would get people under like 2,000 a day or 2,300 a day, which is better than nothing. All right. This is Ofer Street. Mostly whole food, plant-based, with a whole spelled with an A-H, several years. But my LDL remains high. Okay. Does it mean I can eat whatever I want? So the average LDL of someone eliminating from their diets the three things that increase your cholesterol, and that is trans fats, saturated fats, and dietary cholesterol. By eating a whole food plant-based diet, average LDL comes to about 68, which is good for primary prevention. Fortunately, it's a bell curve, such that half the people do even better than that, eating the same diet, and the other half do worse than that, thanks primarily to genetic predisposition. And so if you just have then it's even more important to eat extraordinarily healthy. And if removing those three dietary components from your diet or minimizing them as much as possible isn't sufficient, then you move on to adding healthy foods to your diet that pull cholesterol from the body. So I'm thinking about Dr. David Jenkins' portfolio diet, adding things like soluble fiber-rich foods like, you know, slimy foods, okra, oatmeal, eggplant, adding nuts, things like that, pulling your cholesterol down from different ways so you have this kind of portfolio effect to lower your cholesterol beyond just being a plant-based diet. Okay, next up. Plants only muncher asks, do the oxalates in spinach should be eaten alone? Should it be eaten alone with other leafy greens or not eaten at all? No, you just have to moderate your intake. So for the three greens that are high in oxalates, spinach, Swiss chard, and beet greens, you should not eat cups a day. Now, if you have a history of oxalate kidney stones, I would move away from high oxalate foods altogether. But for someone who isn't, who doesn't have that history, you just don't want to eat cups a day of spinach. You do want to eat cups a day of greens, though. So then you'd diversify your greens intake to get some of the lower oxalate greens like, kale and collards and bok choy, all those other wonderful greens on the list. So spinach, super healthy food, but stingy with its calcium and number one source of oxalates intake in the country. And so if you get too much, you can increase your risk of kidney stones, which are ouchy. Man of constant sorrow asks, a doctor claims that B12 causes cancer. Any evidence of this or is this BS? I actually have a video about it. I just put in B12 cancer pop right up. And all will be revealed. All right. Shayla Blair, trying to wean off an SSRI for anxiety because side effects are so disruptive. That's very common. And alternatives, a way to lower, we talked about anxiety earlier on the Q&A. What's up with plants says, thank you. Oh, that's nice. You're welcome. Any opinion? Oh, on the Mark II study, specifically intensity and duration of exercise and not duration of exercise. Causing coronary atherosclerosis. I will look into it. I have not. I'm sure it's in my inbox. We have all sorts of wonderful volunteer article retrievers that scour the literature for good stuff for me to sit down and write new videos on, but have been in book mode, and so I've yet to do the next big batch of nutrition facts videos, but we'll certainly check that study out. Next up, here we go. Man of constant sorrow is back. No wonder you're in constant sorrow if you have all these medical issues. Any advice on how to treat hiatal hernia? So hiatal hernia can be considered a pressure disease, similar to hemorrhoids, diverticulosis, and varicose veins. Where excessive straining at stool. In fact, any straining at stool is excessive. Bowel movement should be effortless because you're eating so much fiber. We evolved to eat over 100 grams of fiber a day. Now, 97% of Americans don't even reach the recommended minimum daily intake, which is depends on your caloric intake, but it's under 30 grams. When you strain a stool, you can actually push part of your stomach up into your chest cavity. And that can contribute to acid reflux, all sorts of things. So critically important to eat fiber-rich foods to prevent outpouchings from your intestine, like diverticulosis or veins around the end of your digestive tract for hemorrhoids, etc. Okay, next up, I think I actually missed the flu because they go so quickly, but Tricia. Tricia's sister has severe allergies. Oh, it's interesting. Allergies to dietary nickel. And she reacts. So, whole grains filled with a lot of minerals. I'm not surprised they have nickel in them. And she's severely obese. What can you do? Eat low nickel foods. I don't think I could even name which. So, I mean, look, you don't have to eat whole grains. Whole grains are little seeds. What is a whole grain? It's a little plant. Stick it in the ground. and makes a new plant. So botanically, so seeds, nuts, beans, whole grains are all kind of the same thing. You put it in the ground, the plant pops up. So they have kind of similar nutritional aspects. And so if for whatever reason you can't do whole grains, you could do other so-called seeds and get the same kind of nutritional benefits. Next up, Noriko. I've been making organic bone broth for years for joints, special needs. Also faithfully using multi-collagen. I don't know what that means. For gut health, joints, and skin, is it terrible? What do you recommend? I just did a webinar on collagen. Those videos will be up soon on nutritionfacts.org. In fact, a bunch of our webinars are now, you can just, the kind of archived ones you can watch. I don't know if that one is or not. So I talk about how I talk about the kind of controversy surrounding eating collagen for both skin aging and for joint health, and basically kind of the bottom line. Oh, I'm so sorry. Let me turn my do not disturb on. I should have done that before. The bottom line is that instead of eating collagen, we should boost our own endogenous production. And that was with a number of collagen-promoting foods and nutrients. So 95 milligrams of vitamin C a day, which is actually more than the recommended daily allowance, was one of the recommendations. So, you know, vitamin C-rich foods are like citrus and broccoli and bell peppers and tropical fruits. And there were some other foods that can boost collagen intake for those who want to... for those who think it might help. Did I just lose that? Kim says partners is a 27-year-old male, presumably, diagnosed diverticulitis. Here we go. We were just talking. Oh, and because he's been eating very high fiber, exercise, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so fiber is the critical point. And so diverticulitis is an inflammation of one of the diverticulosis outpouchings from the diet. And so unfortunately they don't go away. So if, in populations that eat whole food plant-based diets, there's essentially no diverticulitis found or diverticulosis found, but it's very possible if this is relatively recent conversion that for the first, 20 years of this person's life, was straining at stool, blowing out pieces of their colon. And then only recently, for whatever reason, did one get inflamed. So better to prevent in the first place, but certainly, there's all you can do now is prevent further a diverticuli from forming, and you do that by maintaining your high fiber diet. Okay, Larry says, do crackers, bread, potato chips contain resistant starch even though they've only been cooled to room temperature rather than refrigerated? We want to refrigerate. So for example, you bake a potato, put it in the fridge, and then you warm it back up, and you have that form the formation of extra resistant starch, but it doesn't happen at room temperature. And even in the fridge, we're talking about, I think it was like 2% formation. 2% of the starch kind of turns into resistant starch, meaning that it's resistant to digestion from our small intestine enzyme, so makes it down to large intestine, acts as a prebiotic to feed our good bacteria. But something like a legume, beans, split peas, chickpeas, lentils, they start out like 3-4%. So if you really want to feed your gut bugs, whole grains, legumes are the way to go. But yeah, you can get a little extra resistant starch. But if you're going to eat potatoes, having like potato salad would be better just because it's cold. And actually, the vinegar in the potato salad also reduces the glycemic impact, which would be good as well. Okay, next up, astaxanthin, found almost entirely in seafood and algae. Sounds like important antioxidant. How do vegans get enough? It's unnecessary to get any in one's diet. If you are eating a plant-based diet, you are, or feeding a whole food plant-based diet, you're getting on average, 50 times more antioxidants than someone, centering their diets around user processed junk or animal foods. And so there's nothing particular about that particular antibiotic that we need to get into our diet. Diagnosed pre-diabetic, I'm so sorry to hear. Hemoglobin A1C 6.1, triglycerides too high. Asian, 5'11", 166 pounds, 11. What's that? You know, I wonder what BMI that is. Someone should type that into a BMI calculator and find out for me. But basically, if your waist circumference is greater than half your height, then you have too much visceral fat, and that may very well be what's causing this.